Becoming a Geek Leader, Season 2.
Welcome to the Becoming a Geek Leader podcast. My name is Tom Cooper. As a geek, I'm on a mission to figure out better ways to lead others at work and at home. Through the Becoming a Geek Leader podcast, I'm sharing what I'm learning so I can help make you more effective at leading people too. Ready? I spoke with Dr. Peter Bamberger from Tel Aviv University's Business School about engineers becoming leaders, and he said,
"If you take an engineer and you want to turn them into a leader in an organization, you can't just assume that you promote them and they'll sort of learn over time how to become a leader.
Right?
Some of them will. The vast majority won't.
Some of them will, but the vast majority won't. So here you are. You're a talented engineer." Maybe you're running a team of technical folks, but the fact is they won't magically get better at things like communicating clearly or delegating effectively or dealing with conflict in a healthy way. They need to learn those skills. That's why I created Geek to Great 101. It's a simple way for you to help your team members with an easy plan to improve these skills and more. For less than $500, your team can start to make progress. Find more information and get immediate access to your first free lesson at brighthillgroup.com/helpinggeeks. That's brighthillgroup.com/helpinggeeks. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of Becoming a Geek Leader. As many of you know, I had suffered a hand injury about 4 weeks ago, and that has definitely slowed down my progress, but it has not dampened my enthusiasm for the work that I'm doing and the work that I'm doing with you. I'm really excited about season 3. It is almost here, and I have already got laid down on tape some fantastic information from thought leaders that I am going to be including in season 3. During season 3, we're going to talk about topics like building consensus on your team, raising concerns without starting a fight, how to get more recognition at work, how to have better team meetings, goal setting, and so much more, so many other topics that are going to be fantastic. This week, I've got a treat for you. As we're getting ready for season 3, I mentioned we're going to have thought leaders joining us, and as a bonus, this week, I'm pulling a powerful interview from the archives. Brian Field is one of the best thinkers around when it comes to how to run effective meetings, and I know you're going to get a lot from what he has to say. Listen for the 5 ways that meetings can go south and what you can do to keep your next meeting on track. The ideas that Brian is about to share are ideas you can use no matter what level you're on of the 4 levels of thinking as a geek leader. Whether you're an individual contributor, a team member, a team leader, or a team builder, if you start to apply the ideas from today's episode, you're going to get... So let's get started.
Thought Leader Segment.
Terrific
in
results.
In the Thought Leader Segment, Tom brings in ideas from today's best thought leaders.
Now, today's topic is meetings. We hate them, but we have to have them. We can't seem to live without them, but they seem like a huge time waster. What can we do about it? Are we just stuck in mind-numbing, awful meetings like Dilbert? Well, today I have the privilege of interviewing Brian Field from MeetingResult.com, and he tells me he's got a way to fix that. Brian Field is a senior information technology executive. He's a co-founder of Meeting Result LLC. He has more than 16 years of experience in software, systems development, IT security, business process reengineering, web and mobile technology implementations, and he's worked extensively in both the federal government and private sector. Before co-founding Meeting Result, Mr. Field built and led a sales organization for a defense contractor. He received his Bachelor of Science degree in Industrial and Systems Engineering from Virginia Tech. He's a Hokie and has been a certified project management professional since 2005. And I've worked with Brian. He's a terrific guy with some interesting ideas. And Brian, I want to welcome you to the program today.
Thanks a lot, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to be on here with you.
Now, it's your assertion that you have a mechanism that can help us with meetings. Is that right?
Absolutely. We have done extensive research in this area. My business partner and I, and we've both been project managers for about a decade and a half and have run a lot of meetings, have been witness to a lot of poorly run meetings. And over that period of time, we've learned a lot about, what are some of the right things to do and what are some of the wrong things to do. And that's really what we captured in our system that we have built for running what we call powerfully simple meetings.
Well, now, there are a lot of things in business that could be done better. Why meetings? Why did you decide to go after ineffective meetings?
You know, there were two main reasons why we decided to tackle meetings. The first reason is that we believe there's an incredible opportunity for individuals and organizations to get more out of their meetings while also spending less time in meetings. If you look at the amount of time that we spend in meetings and the results that come out of those meetings, there's a very disproportionate balance. There's a lot of meetings, not a lot of value coming out of those meetings. And so as we started to look into the problem of meetings and doing some research, we looked at and talked to a lot of people, and the common theme that we kept hearing from people was people have just accepted the fact that meetings are ineffective and inefficient. It's sort of like the status quo, and they've kind of just glossed over it, and they've lost touch with, you know, the fact that there is a better way, there can be a better way of doing meetings, and they've sort of just accepted that status quo. And we reviewed some surveys and also looked at some other data in our research process, and one of the surveys we looked at was one from Microsoft. They surveyed about 38,000 business professionals and found that there are about 11 million meetings in the U.S. every day alone. That's 3 billion meetings a year. And another finding of the survey was that 71% of the employees felt that meetings were completely ineffective. And so when we looked at the large number of meetings that happen and take place every day and the inefficiencies that exist in those meetings, and that was the primary reason we said, hey, this is something that we can solve. And, and by solving this, we can really move the needle for an organization in terms of increasing their productivity and also helping their employees be more engaged. Because when you sit through these mindless meetings day after day after day, it takes a toll on employee engagement. And then the second reason that we decided to tackle the problem with meetings is that we felt that although there's been a plethora of approaches and books and processes developed for meetings, we felt that all these traditional approaches to solving meetings, that they had really been designed to treat the symptoms of bad meetings instead of actually the underlying root causes. And what I mean by that is when we sit down with somebody and we ask them about their experiences with meetings, you know, we hear a lot of common complaints. You know, too many meetings cut into my quote-unquote real work. Meetings are too long. They're a waste of time. They're poorly planned. You know, people miss meetings or show up late. And so we kept hearing these common symptoms, as we're calling them, of these bad meetings that people were forced to go through. And the more we dug into it, we realized that, in fact, these are just symptoms. And if all of the traditional approaches have been aimed at curing the symptoms, we feel like that's why there hasn't been a good approach that's been able to create a consistent positive meeting outcome for most organizations, is because they're treating the symptoms and not the underlying root causes.
Okay, so if we assume that, I mean, I have been in many mind-numbing meetings, so I certainly can relate to the problem as you describe it. If I'm a little bit skeptical, I'm going to say, yeah, but a lot of times I'm just a participant in the meeting, and it's really I'm at the whim of the organization and the whether this person who's running the meeting has the skill to run the meeting or not. Are you telling me that it's possible to actually help an organization move that and change that?
Absolutely, Tom. I think even if you are a participant, there's things that you can do. For instance, I was in a meeting recently, and I've been in the same situation many times in the past, where something is brought up during a meeting. Let's say, for instance, that somebody says, hey, you know, this needs to be done, like some after action needs to be taken following the meeting. And a lot of times what you'll hear is there's some ambiguous language used. For instance, someone will say, hey, you know, HR needs to send that policy out to the employees, and that's the end of the actual statement. And so if you as an attendee, even as an attendee, stop and say, hey, can we clarify that? You know, so who in HR... Who specifically in HR needs to send out the policy? Does it need to go to all the employees? When do we need to send it by? So even as an attendee, you have the opportunity, I think, to inject some clarity into that particular statement and make sure that everybody's clear about who in HR, when they're going to send it, and exactly who it needs to go out to.
That sounds very effective. I can also see that as potentially having somebody see me in the meeting as being a difficult person to have in the meeting because of being so specific.
I think there's always a risk of coming off that way. But I think if people have the courage to be able to make sure that everyone's on the same page and that there's clear expectations, I think in the end there's more benefit than any potential harm that could be caused by that.
There's no question. I could see how it makes it so much easier to know whether or not we were successful, who needed to have that policy, who was going to do the job, when was it going to happen. I mean, you have a lot more clarity about that. Now, you tell me that you have done this investigation. You spent quite a bit of time digging into understanding the problem of meetings and the sort of current state of meetings. And you say there are five root causes that contribute to unproductive meetings?
Yeah, Tom, there's five root causes. So we spent 2 years writing our book, Powerfully Simple Meetings. And during the course of about 2 years, we did extensive research both with our customers. We looked at research that had been done already. We met with folks and we asked questions about their meeting experiences. And really, we started to hone in on some underlying causes that are really producing the symptoms that I talked about earlier. And we identified five. The first one is ambiguity. And I kind of touched on that a minute ago when I talked about, you know, being clear about things, right? And really, when we talk about ambiguity, it's really the single most dangerous killer we feel for meeting effectiveness, because it really creeps its way into every aspect of the meeting, from the planning to the actual execution of the meeting to the follow-up. If you think about, if you've ever gone into a meeting before and you've been sitting there and you're not quite certain, why are we here, right? So people
who called this meeting?
The meeting. Yeah, who called the meeting? It's like the famous cliche, right? Who called this meeting? And so if that meeting leader wasn't very clear about the objectives, then that's setting that meeting up for failure. You know, we don't know why we're here. We've got a bunch of people in the room whose time is valuable, and we're essentially going to waste their time because we're not clear about why we're actually meeting. So that's more on the planning end of it. But then you get into the meeting and you start talking about capturing the important information that comes up during meetings, and we call those meeting assets. And those are just those important actions, those important decisions, issues, keynotes, and risks that are surfaced during the meeting that need to be clarified and captured. And so if we're not clear about those valuable assets that come up and we don't document them and make sure everybody's on the same page, then that ambiguity creeps in again. And if you look at after the meeting, if we're not clear about the timing on when things are due, and we're not clear about, you know, who's on point to do what, if we let that clarity escape, then we lose the opportunity to extract, you know, a lot of value out of that meeting. So that's the first meeting killer, and really the most dangerous one is the ambiguity. The second one is kind of closely linked to the first one. It's limited accountability. And we see this exhibited both on the part of the people meeting, who are leading the meetings, and also people who are attending the meetings. And if you have meeting attendees who show up late, or they come unprepared, or they're distracted by their cell phones, you know, they're not taking accountability for being an active, engaged participant in that meeting. And then on the other side of it, you have the meeting leaders who, you know, didn't thoughtfully plan the meeting. They came into the meeting without a good approach for maximizing the use of everybody's time. And so they're not being accountable for the time that they've asked everybody in that room to invest for that meeting. So that's what I mean by limited accountability.
Okay, so you've got ambiguity, limited accountability. What's the third one?
The third one is over and under participation. And we've all had this experience. You go into a meeting room and there's, you know, 25, 30 people there, and you stop, and the first thought you ask yourself is, why are there so many people in this meeting room? How could we possibly need 30 people to do what we came here to do today? And then you know, if you're like me, I'm into numbers. I start thinking about, gosh, how much is this meeting actually costing your organization? Because you've got 30 people in this room for an hour or 2 hours. And on the flip side, we have under participation. And I've been in many instances where this has happened, where you're in a meeting and perhaps the person was invited and didn't show up, but something needs to be done. A critical decision needs to be made, and that decision maker is not there. And so when you look at, you know, the time that's been invested in that meeting, it's gone to waste because that decision was one of the main objectives of that meeting, and now we can't make that decision because that person didn't show up. The fourth one?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, I was just going to summarize. We have your ambiguity. We've got limited accountability. Then you got over or under participation, right?
Correct. Those are the first three. And then the fourth one is inadequate process and training.
Wait, are you telling me that some people get trained to run meetings? Because I'll tell you what, I was in business for a long time without anybody ever training me how to run a meeting. Actually, I did have one boss who was probably the best boss I ever had, and he invited me to run the staff meeting one time, and I thought, how hard can this be? I mean, you step into the room, you kind of sit around the table, everybody kind of talks. It's it's just a staff meeting. We're just kind of catching up on status. That could be difficult. And so, like most things that I had done at that point in my life, I decided I was going to wing it, and I just showed up with no preparation whatsoever. And here we had a staff meeting. I think there might have been 10 people in the department, and that meeting was a train wreck. I mean, it was an absolute disaster, and we got to the end of the meeting, and mercifully it ended, mercifully for everybody, including me. My boss took me aside and said, "How do you think that went?" And I had to confess, it was obvious. He was in the room. It's obvious it did not go well. And he said, "What do you think you could do better?" And I appreciated so much his willingness to invest in me, because that was the first time in my professional career that anybody had given me any guidance whatsoever about running a meeting. And I had been, I'd been in business for a while, and I had worked for a few companies by that time in my career. I was shocked that I was so woefully unprepared, and that I had finally had somebody take some interest in me to help me with that. I would say that's probably one of the best things that ever happened to me professionally from an education perspective, is that I had a boss who cared enough to challenge me and encourage me to grow my skills in that area. But it just seems laughable to me, because that's the only role I was ever in where somebody tried to give me any training on project running meetings.
It doesn't exist, Tom, and it's really baffling. I mean, if you think about the investment that organizations are making in meetings, and to not equip their employees to be able to do to run them effectively, it's amazing to me that seems to be a huge gap in the educational curriculum for employees. I mean, people get trained on all sorts of things in organizations, and giving presentations, doing other things, and for something that consumes so much of our time. We did a survey again of our customers, asking them that specific question: have you ever received training in your organization on how to run an effective meeting? And we had less than 10% of the people who responded saying, yes, I had either received formal or informal training. Perhaps they had a mentor, like you mentioned, who pulled them under their wing and taught them how to run a meeting. But it was eye-opening to me. I was like, wow, I can't believe that organizations don't have a training program to teach people something of such a basic skill of performing business.
It's amazing. I think that is a very valuable and important thing. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think we don't know what we're doing, and that leads to a lot of pain and frustration. So we talked about ambiguity. We talked about low accountability, over and under participation, lack of adequate training. What's your fifth root cause?
So actually, tied in with the fourth one, it's kind of a dual one here. We could almost have six, but it's actually inadequate process and training. So if we take the other side of that one and look at the inadequate process, just like a lot of organizations don't have training, they also don't have an official process for running meetings. And maybe that's why they don't have training, Tom. Maybe if they had a process that they could train on,
right,
they'd have training for the process. So it's kind of, those two seem to go hand in hand. You have to have a good process for running meetings. Everybody in the organization needs to understand the process. And I'll say something here that I'm sure you appreciate. It needs to be simple. We can't give people a complex process to learn. They're not going to use
it. Give me a 75-page three-ring binder. Right, a 75-page three-ring binder on here's how we run a meeting, right? That's nobody's ever going to look
exactly
at that. Yeah.
And what we got for the listeners today, the 14-page white paper, 14 pages, very simple. It lays out our process that we have developed for running simple meetings, and it's very simple. It's basically a lot of best practices thrown together with some important things that you need to make sure that you focus on, and that's one of the most important things is being clear, as I mentioned earlier, about why you're in the meeting, who needs to be there, and making sure you achieve the outcome and communicate that to people.
Well,
so that's process and training.
Yep.
The fifth meeting killer,
mm-hmm,
is insufficient data. And this one might be a little confusing, so I'm going to spend a little bit longer explaining this. There's two aspects to this. One deals with how meetings perform. And we asked a lot of people, we said, hey, you know, how do you guys judge how your meetings are performing? And how have you done that in the past? When you look at meetings, you know, your boss asked you before how you thought the meeting went. Was it sort of a subjective kind of
Entirely subjective. Yeah. And you know, I worked in a sales organization, and the CEO said, I never, ever want to hear good meeting. He said, you know, because a sales guy walks out of a meeting and people, and they ask, hey, how'd it go? It was a good meeting. Well, how do you define good meeting? That was the CEO's point. He said, you know, I don't know what you mean when you say good meeting. What are the action items? What are we, you know, what comes out of that? How are we making that work? What does it mean to say you had a good meeting?
Yeah, it's really, you have to have a way to quantify it. And that's sort of one of the things that we've developed both in our process and our technology that we've developed to automate the process is we're keeping track of about 20 different metrics that provide sort of a gauge on how effective are your meetings. And it's pretty basic things like, you know, what was your attendance percentage? Did you achieve your objectives? You know, what percentage of the objectives in your meetings did you achieve, your agenda items? When you look at the assets I talked about earlier, the keynotes, the action items, the decision, the issues, and the risk, there's three of those items, action items, issues, and risk, that require some follow-up after the meeting. And so we keep track of, you know, were those items completed on time? How many are outstanding? And so we start to provide this snapshot of both the meeting from an overview perspective of accomplishing our objectives and making sure people are showing up, and also diving in and looking at the information and saying, are we following up on things after the meeting to give people a good idea of how they're performing in their meetings? Because what we really believe in doing a lot of our research and our experience tells us that meetings are what I call a lead measure for the ultimate success of your project. So if your lag measure is that my project is completed on time and within budget, we believe that meetings are a great lead measure that can tell you, are we trending towards accomplishing what we said we want to do in this project on time and within budget?
Well, all right, we spent a good amount of time today talking about the problems in meetings, and I think this certainly resonated with me. I've all five of those I've seen in many meetings. Five of five have been a problem. So you've got a process, you've got a way you can help with this?
Absolutely. We have a process. The 14-page white paper that we've made available today is sort of just a primer, just to introduce everyone to the process. We've also written a book on it that goes much more in depth about not only the process, but some key skill areas and some other ideas for getting started. You know, how do you implement, you know, something like this within your organization? As most people would expect, meetings are sort of a cultural type of thing. Like, there's a cultural norm for how meetings are conducted in organizations and how they're viewed. And so what we suggest and what we're proposing within our framework is that not to try to make it a huge cultural change initiative, because typically that top-down approach is really not going to go over well. It's to start small. I mean, maybe you've got one team in your organization. You want to start and try to implement that on the team. So we actually talk about trying to get started as well in the book. And then the third piece of it is the technology that I briefly mentioned, where we take the process that we've developed and we've automated it with some web-based technology that allows you to manage the complete life cycle of your meetings.
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to point out, I had the opportunity to read your book, and it's very good. I think I have never seen as deep a treatment in such a small book of a problem space and a way to try and tackle it. I mean, I think it's a really powerful package of information. And there are two levels that struck me when I was reading the book that really caused me to say, I've got to get Brian on the podcast, because the first is around personal productivity, that I could, as a project manager or somebody who's running or facilitating meetings, could be in a position to be more effective personally. I could make a difference for myself. My life could get better if I could do a better job with this. And then what you're talking about there is could the organization benefit? And I think the subtitle of your book is really on point, Your Guide to Fewer, Faster, More Focused Business Meetings. And I think that's really, when you talk about your powerfully simple meetings concept and the, you know, having fewer meetings, we all could resonate with that. We'd like to have more time on our calendar. Faster meetings, my goodness, if I could get things done, that would be great. And focus, That's just a terrific concentration of the things that are out there. And I think looking at your template for putting an agenda together is really simple and effective. And I think that's one of the reasons I was excited about being able to bring that to the audience, to help them be able to see what can be done and how it doesn't have to be a 75-page thing. It can actually be fairly straightforward about what are your meeting objectives and are we on target for those objectives. I think those are terrific things. Now, you had mentioned that you've got an online meeting planning template, right? That's something that people can go in and fill out online.
Absolutely. It's very simple. It just walks you through the important pieces of information you want to make sure that that you capture when you're planning a meeting. And really, the template's great, but it's also great to keep in mind the five meeting killers that we talked about, and especially some of the ones around the ambiguity and accountability, and just making sure as you go through that planning process that you're very clear about your objective. Because sometimes what you'll see is someone will say, hey, we want to discuss the ideas for a prototype. Mm-hmm. And that'll be the objective for the meeting. Where what we're suggesting is that you go one or two levels deeper and say, okay, we want to discuss the ideas. What do you really want to have come out of that meeting? You just want to have that you've discussed them, or do you want to perhaps prioritize them so that we understand which ones are more important to the team? So just going a little bit deeper and being clearer about what exactly are we trying to hone in on in that meeting time.
Well, that's terrific, and I know that your company, actually, you've taken this idea of getting the process and understanding a process, and you've automated that. You've put it into a tool that tracks that stuff, that allows people to get access to the information from the meetings, that follows through with that. And in looking at the capabilities of that tool, it looks like it could have a huge impact on not just the actual meetings themselves, but the flow of data after the meeting. Because I know as a project manager, many times I was typing something up and then I have to copy and paste it into something else. And you have a system for managing the flow of information after the meeting as well. Is that right?
That's right, Tom. Absolutely. And basically, once you capture that information once in the system, it gets used for a bunch of different purposes. For instance, if there's action items and follow-up items, those trigger automatic notifications to the people who were assigned. Those emails go out. There's online forums where they can update status. Each stakeholder has their own dashboard that lists their meetings that they've attended, what they're scheduled to attend, and what follow-up items they're responsible for. And so they can manage all that information there. Data is updated in real time. So from a meeting leader perspective, if I've sent out all these different actions and as people are updating them, I've got a real-time view into the latest status information on everything that's happened without requiring me to go out and call people or email them. So again, that's one of the ways we save time is on follow-up activities. So in addition to saving time by making sure that you're running more efficient meetings, there's also some time savings in those follow-up activities.
Well, I think this has been a terrific conversation. I wish we had two more hours to go into this because I know we would get good value out of it. There's so much here we've barely even been able to scratch the surface on. I really appreciate your generosity and your willingness to share this information with us. I think you're right. It is a black hole inside organizations. We don't really know how to do this stuff, but it's critically important to our success. One of the things that Brian has made available is the white paper that you can download. You can just go to the website, brighthillgroup.com, and you can download that white paper. Also, we'll put a link to the meeting planning template online. And essentially what you do for that is you just fill in some details about the meeting, and the system will automatically email you an agenda that you can distribute to your participants in the meeting. Brian, I want to thank you for being here today. This has been great information.
Tom, I appreciate the opportunity. I thank you. I really hope that it provides some value to your listeners. We're very passionate about improving meetings, and we're always here to help if anybody has any questions.
Well, thanks. And for our listeners, I want to make sure Brian's got a ton of great information available on his website, meetingresult.com. So make sure you check that out.
Episode Hack.
In the Episode Hack segment, Tom shares one action-oriented takeaway from this episode, something you can apply right away.
So today, Brian talked about the five key areas where meetings fail. For your hack from this episode, I want you to think about an upcoming meeting you're about to attend. Before you show up, understand clearly why the meeting is happening. Before the meeting ends, make sure that you say out loud who will do what specific thing and by when. Even if the formal meeting organizer won't do it, if you're just an attendee, make the time to say who will do what specific thing and by when, and you will be amazed at how much more gets done. That's today's episode hack. If you like the podcast, can I ask you to give me a hand? It turns out it's a big deal to have a rating in iTunes. Now, I've heard other podcasters asking for ratings and reviews, and I wondered why they kept going after it again and again and again. Do you want to know? Because almost no one actually does it. It only takes a minute, and it's a huge help. So why is that? Great ratings help iTunes decide that this podcast is worth promoting. And when you put a rating or a review, it helps it appear as a top podcast in the iTunes search. Could you please take a moment to do it right now? There are three simple steps. One, go to the iTunes Store podcasts. Two, search for Becoming a Geek Leader. And three, give the podcast a great rating. Thanks. This is Tom Cooper. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join me next time for another episode of Becoming a Geek Leader. Join me in my mission of discovering better ways to lead others at work and at home.